while on break, and I want to thank the audience and especially Sly Rivers and Adnella Barba for making this show possible. I want to encourage all of you, stay informed, stay engaged, and stay positive, and stay tuned. Another episode of The Car Show is coming up. See you next week.
This is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. Michelle is out this week on the road to the Motor City. She'll have stories on that when she gets back, which leaves Carl and I here in the studio without adult supervision. Who is going to stop us from saying stupid things? No one. Yes, that's right. Please, let's hope that some of our guests here will. We have two very exciting guests, and I don't throw that term around lightly. These guys are both cool people who I have admired for many, many years. Though I would, in the case of Johnny, I wouldn't admit that. But let's first introduce everybody's best friend. He has his own podcast with Spike, Cars with Spike or something. He'll straighten me out on that. Johnny Lieberman. Welcome, Johnny.
Hello, Mark. Hello, Carl. Hello, Charles.
Hello.
And of course, I forgot Carl Brower, who is an industry veteran, executive analyst at IC Cars, host of the nationally syndicated The Drive with Lauren and Carl. Carl Brower. Sorry, Carl. Welcome.
Hey, you know, I figured you'd remember me eventually. Maybe it might be the last 5 minutes of the show, but you did good. You got me in early. So thank you, Mark.
And we are, I was just flustered by the awesome star power of our fourth and final guest here, a man we have all admired for many, many years. His 6'5" frame cannot contain his outsized 150,000 watt personality. Ladies and gentlemen, Charles Phoenix. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you. You make me feel so tall. I'm not that tall, but I'm tall.
You're at least 6'5".
And only in your mind. Only in your
mind. I shot pictures of you out in Palm Springs. You were towering over me. But anyway.
Well, you must be 5'3" then.
No. I'm just a humble radio hack. Okay. So we have this is really a fun opportunity, and we're going to start out with Charles Phoenix. We could do several shows just on Charles. He is a celebrant of Americana, of mid-century modern architecture, of cars with tail fins. And we are going to kind of focus on the cars for the most part, at least to start out. Charles, is it true, were you born on a used car lot?
Well, I say I was born on a used car lot, and I might as well have been born on a used car lot. I came home from the hospital to a used car lot. I mean, actually, we had a house, but I preferred being at the used car lot. So, I mean, literally since, you know, I might as well have been 2 days old, already noticing all the cars on my dad's car lots, A, and B, judging the neighbors and the grandparents and the relatives by what kind of car they had. I mean, it was already kind of crazy. So the people across the street had a 59 Pontiac, which has these like foot-long hot dog taillights. And I could not believe, I'm like, who are these people across the street? Well, my mother said, that's Mr. and Mrs. Snodgrass.
That was their real name, wasn't it?
So of course I had to call them Mr. and Mrs. Snodgrass. But anyway, and then one day, I'll never forget, it was like a few years later, like I was 5 years old, and in their front yard, they chopped off the head of a chicken, and the chicken was running around with its head. I've never seen that before since. I'll never forget that. And then the neighbors next door, Mr. and Mrs. Haney, they were probably in their 80s, and they had a 50 Studebaker with a bullet nose and suicide doors. And because the car was a 1949, and I was born in 1962, so we're like in the, you know, 63, 64, I thought that's way too old of a car. I don't approve of it. So I threw dirt clods at their house. Then, you know, the grandparents came over. One set of grandparents had a Plymouth Valiant, which I was like thinking like, okay, this is, you know, this is not good. But then the other grandparents came over in a 58 Cadillac in coral, and it had airbags because in 1958, GM offered airbag suspension. You know that, of course, right?
Yeah, and it took, you said it took 10 minutes to rise up enough that they could drive it away. Was that right?
Well, when I was a little kid, I do recall that they had to go out to the garage and start the car because the system was failing and wait 10 minutes for the car to raise up for them to go anywhere. So they didn't keep it long. They traded it.
I think that the 58 Cadillac had everything. It had like, right, it had auto-dimming headlights.
It did. It did have everything. It had it all, except... Yeah. I'm not sure if they had, did they have cruise control yet? Or did that came out in 59? Chrysler offered autopilot, which was cruise control starting in 58. But a friend of mine had a 59 Imperial with the autopilot. And one day he was driving down Highland in Los Angeles. And all of a sudden the car just like took off and locked into 75 miles an hour.
Excellent.
And like, oh my God. It's like, you know, that's not good when that happens. So anyway,
it's like, yeah. It's like mechanical cruise control. So you can't like override it. It's...
I mean, the only thing to do is turn the car off. So yeah, I hate
when it was a little chain on the throttle linkage to the carburetor, I think. Right.
And something and, like that. I mean, everything that we do digitally now, they did with like gears, you know, like
springs and gears. Yeah. And of course, and that particular hoses. Chrysler would have had some torque. So if it's trying to go, you're not going to just, oh, I'll just step on the brakes and slow it down. No, it weighs a lot. Object in motion. That's kind of scary.
But yeah. Like, I mean, that was the first year the Chrysler introduced the 413. So they no longer were offering the Hemi. But yeah, I mean, it still had plenty of pep. And, you know, I mean, I've had all the old cars. I've driven the GMs, the Fords, the Chrysler products. And, you know, you guys, I guess you probably already know. I mean, the Chrysler products can outdrive them all simply because one thing and one thing only. And that would be the
Hemi? Torsion bars.
Torsion bars. Oh, yeah. Bars. I mean, I'm not saying they're necessarily faster, but they can outhandle. That's why all the bootleggers had Mopar products.
I mean, you know, Mopar or no car, I believe is the expression. So,
well, you know, people are so territorial with their cars. Like, you know, I'm, you know, I only like Fords or I only like Dodges or only like, you know, it's so funny how people are so brand dedicated. I mean, I kind of like them all, A and B, though I rarely ever admit it. I mean, lately I've admitted it more, but you know, I've always had a wandering eye since I was like 2 years old for foreign cars, like European and Japanese cars. The other day, someone like, do you like Russian cars too? And I'm like, hell yeah. So, you know, but I kind of keep it a secret. And I never have bought and sold, you know, any foreign car. No, never. Only American. But, you know, I look at them and I think, you know, I'd go to the party in that, you know. So
your dad being a car salesman, so you probably inherited that gene, right?
I completely did. I mean, I'm like, you know, when I was like 3 years old, I said, you know, we have to sit down and you need to tell me every make and model of every car. I need to know this.
And was he a good teacher at that?
Yeah. I mean, he knew. And, you know, I said, what's the best car ever of all time? And at that time, this is probably like in the, you know, early 70s or something. He said, well, the car that would just go more than any other car, outlast any other car that you could get more mileage out of, the ultimate workhorse is what he considered to be the best car. He said the Dodge Dart. And it's like, you know, I guess we all know those Dodge Darts did last on the road for
50. I mean, slant six is an unkillable engine. So yeah.
There you go. So Dodge.
Yeah, they were the Toyota truck before Toyota trucks existed, you know.
They totally were. I mean, you know, we are past the time now where you kind of see these cars still floating around. But, you know, I've been on this for a long time. And especially, you know, when I kind of grew up and moved to the big city in the 80s. You know, and started driving around all the time, everywhere, city, burbs, and all that, just kind of in search of cars and places and stuff. I mean, these cars were still lurking about. They were parked in the streets, they were parked in driveways, they were parked in garages. You know, back then you'd look at the recycler and like about every other week, I would find a low mileage original car to basically collect, flip, you know, whatever. So it was kind of always my side hustle. I mean, it's kind of ebbed and flowed over the years of having, you know, buying and selling classic cars as a side hustle. But yeah, so but now we're past the era. You just don't see them hardly at all. I mean, they're
The collectors have discovered them, and you can't buy anything for less than $100,000, right?
Well, no, I mean, they're out there. But, you know, the thing is that I tell people we've been Southern California has been supplying classic cars to the whole wide world since classic cars became classic cars. I mean, this is the number one shopping spot, and we're kind of, you know, I don't want to say tapped out, but there's, you know, there's still stuff here. But, you know, as I said, we've been supplying the whole wide world. So,
well, one of the things that you do is buy and sell. And there are two listed on your website right now, I think.
Yes, there are. Yes, I love to sell. My the lane I'm in, as I say, are low mileage original Survivor class cars. I'm not mechanically inclined. I just wasn't hardwired that way. So I've always really kind of leaned into buying cars that had just kind of innocent, you know, been sitting in a garage or whatever, and, you know, didn't really need that much to get going. No restoration. I mean, literally I've had 200 or 300 cars. I've never had a car painted once.
Wow.
I've had one car, the front seat reupholstered. I don't like to do any of that. That's not my jam. Other people like love restoring cars. They love to have to do everything and send the car.
No, I'm with you, Charles. I hate it.
Yeah. I hate it. And it's a nightmare and it's super expensive. So I just kind of, because I didn't know how to do that, nor did I want to do that, I just kind of leaned in immediately, like in the 80s, realizing, oh yeah, I can buy a car that's like kind of, well, I don't want to say kind of nice, decent, innocent, low mileage car that's maybe a little dusty or whatever, clean it up, it's worth double immediately. A clean car is worth double a dirty car. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way I leaned in, and rarely ever did I do any mechanical work or have any mechanical work done on them. Now I'm a little older, these cars. So, you know, I get a car, whether I'm going to keep it or not keep it, you know, I mean, they always need something at this point. I mean, they're old.
Lucky to be in Southern California where there's no slush, no salt, no snow. So the cars that we find here, when we do find one, usually are in pretty good shape.
Yeah. I mean, unless they've just been run into the ground or been sitting outside or at the bottom of a riverbed upside down for the past 40 years. Yeah. I mean, quality is everything. I am like all about it. That's what I go for. So innocent Survivor class. I don't want a car that's been beat up. I don't want a car that's been, you know, lowered or slammed and put back or whatever. I don't want the wrong wheels on it. I don't want to do anything other than just clean it up and just present it as is or enjoy it as is. That's what I'm going to do.
Of all those great cars that you have owned, the 200 something, do you have a favorite?
Well, you know, weirdly, the kind of car that's really, I would have to say at the end of the day, the kind of car that I can't really live without having one on hand is kind of a low-liner car. It's a 1959 Plymouth Sport Fury, and it's very flamboyant. It's got big fins. It's got big medallions on the side of the fins, and that big, you know, some people call it a toilet seat, flying saucer, bird bath on the trunk. I mean, it's an over-the-top car. Swivel seats, has a really neat interior. Mm-hmm. I've always had to have one of those around, so I don't know what it is about that car.
Was that the car in the movie Christine?
Christine is a 58, and okay. That movie Christine made those, you know, late 50s Belvederes by Plymouth, you know, really iconic. But yeah, Christine is a 58. The 59 is similar, but they actually kind of duded it up a little more and made it a little more, you know, over the top and exaggerated. And, you know, now, you know, I like to tell people, I mean, just to kind of give them a sense of reality, it's like, here's this car. This was like a just starting out price point car back in the day. And they're like,
right,
you're kidding. Yeah. You know, I can't believe that.
It was a Plymouth for crying out loud. Right. That was like the Scion, that was like the Scion brand for Chrysler years ago.
Or I'm telling people to kind of give them a little bit, you know, I try to help people to understand, you know, put it in perspective. I'm like, this is like a Toyota Corolla or a Honda Civic. What? You're kidding. You know, they just can't believe it.
But there is something about 50s Mopars. When you look at them with like modern eyes, they're so insane. Like, you know, I saw like a Barrett Jackson one year. It was like a Dodge Royal Crown, just with like emblems, and just it was insane. You know, it was like a 53 maybe, some convertible.
Well, it was probably a 57 or a 58 or a 59 or a 60 or a 61. Yeah, that sweet spot for me is like 50, late 50s to the early 60s, when they really took space age styling to the outer limits. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, we might as well finally admit it to myself, call it what it is. It's like cartoon styling is what it is. I mean, it's whimsical.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
It's literally like, you know, out of a comic book.
The thing people think of most is the tail fins, but there's so much more to that era of design than just the tail fins. I mean, there were little round gun sights on the fronts, top fronts of the fenders on so many cars. There were just the design cues everywhere were crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and all the stainless and aluminum and chrome trim, wild interiors, the instrument clusters and dashes, and the fact that, you know, more or less all of the makers changed all of those details and changed the shape of the car almost every year back then. Mm-hmm. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, from one year to the next, you get a whole new car that looked, yep. you know, sometimes not even similar to the year before. It's like, what? You know, so it's really, it's just, you know, it's kind of just silly and, you know, kind of the sky's the limit. I mean, basically they were selling the style guide for the era was optimism.
Right,
right. It was post-war optimism. Yeah, we exactly. won the war. We were prosperous, and we had money to spend. Ike was laying out that interstate traffic system for us and we needed something big and comfortable to cruise down it.
And so
a lot like today, when you think about it, right? Oh wait, maybe not.
We could use some optimism.
The other thing about the cars back then is like, you know, which is completely not happening now. Not even one. Well, maybe 1%. No, it's one whatever of 1%. You guys will know. No color.
None.
I mean, now, back None. Then, you could literally yeah. buy cars in every dark, bright Easter egg color that there was. I mean, they came in the wildest colors
and pastels everywhere.
Yeah, color is a huge thing for me, and it's fascinating because I've always been, you know, no black, white, silver, or gray cars. That's like my rule. And if you looked at my fleet right now at the house, it's pretty funny. But
I think it's great that you have a fleet, Carl. I don't have a fleet really.
Well, I've got a few cars, but
that's impressive.
I'm at IC Cars, where I work as an executive analyst. We have all this great data, and I've been able to validate not just my sense or what you're kind of saying, Charles, and kind of seeing, but the actual numbers. I've got the receipts. Okay. And like,
it's sad. I know these numbers. It's
like 20 years ago. I can't remember. I'm not going to get the exact data, but I think it's like 2000 to 2005, somewhere in there. 60% of cars were black, white, silver, or gray. So it was already over half of them, but 40% were not. That equivalent number now is 80%. 80% of the cars out there are black, white, silver, or gray. And 20%
as are people's homes, interior decor, like yes. wherever you go, it's yeah. like living in a black and white world. It's weird. It's like, you know, am I watching I Love Lucy? You know, yeah. it's like everything's black and white and gray.
I saw the same report. It was BASF said it was 39% of new cars globally are white, followed by 19% are black, and then 19% were silvers. And then, you know, it was like just over 20% were other colors. But the other colors were mostly blue. If you looked at like purple,
yeah, a lot orange, of blue,
purple, orange, yellow, and green, it was like 4%, and the rest was like blue and not good reds, but like bad, you know, Honda Accord red, you know, that kind of thing. Not
it was it wasn't that long ago. I think what the last Ford Thunderbird came in coral and a nice yellow, and there were some other things. So it kind of hung on for a while, and then there were a few years when purple was kind of a deal, and every now and then you'd see a yellow, but yeah, it is.
Well, they came out with the colors on those heritage styled cars, which I still drive. I drive a Dodge Challenger. I've had four of them, and you know, they've all been the Hemi orange, and I didn't get the plum crazy one, but, you know, of course I wanted that. Now my one is blue that I have. But, you know, the weird thing about the Dodge Challenger is I'm pretty basic. When I don't need all the bells and whistles. You know, I'm not going to go out and pay $80,000 for a Hemi version just because, of course, I like to go fast like everybody else. But, you know, I don't need to. The car goes fast enough. It's a low liner. I've had four of them. Not one hiccup out of all four of them. I mean, I've driven them like 100,000 miles each, except for the one now, not quite, but and nothing's gone wrong. So I don't know why we're talking about nothing going wrong with Dodge Challengers, but you talked about cars and color. So yeah, and the Thunderbird and the PT Cruiser. The other day I saw a PT Cruiser in the parking lot. I'm like, that car is like 25 years old already.
It is.
Yeah. I know. Doesn't that sound weird?
My son owns one. He just drove it across the country. He loves that thing. Who can explain why people love certain kinds of cars?
It had like a little kind of a cartoony gangster quality to it in a funny kind of a way, like, you know, film noir, the shape of it. And then Chevy did, why are we talking about this? Chevy did, what was it, the HRS or whatever?
SSR.
HHR.
They did the HHR and the SSR.
They did them both.
There was something about that HSR. I think it was the front fenders, the stamp of the metal was some like extraordinarily difficult stamp by.
I think it was like they call it a deep draw. I think the term is deep draw, but it's basically like how much angle and how like basically how deep the fenders. You know, you think of body panels and they're curved, but they're relatively flat. And it was like what the dimension from where the bottom of that was by the bumper to where it ended back by the door and how much it changed in angle was like I know what you're saying, Charles. It was like one of the biggest body panels or deepest draw body panels ever produced. Yes.
So for that, I can appreciate it. Plus, you guys, I also appreciate the heritage designs. And I think we're all pretty much done with them, but we're kind of done with them a little bit, it sounds like.
You had the Volkswagen ID Buzz, which is trying to be, you know, the original Volkswagen bus, but they're
trying,
you know, but the Beetle's gone now. Of course, the Challenger's gone.
But now they've come back with the Charger, which is the electric version, right?
True.
But it's electric and gas. It is. It has a gas.
Oh, but here's my question about that, because I don't know. I saw it like 6 months ago online or whatever. Never seen another one. No one's talking about, but when they started to promote it or whatever, is everyone like in the comments like, oh God, this is the worst of all time. I hate this. I mean, one after another. So why the hate? I mean, is it because it was electric or hybrid?
It was because it was electric. And also, electric. I know I wasn't there. I know a lot of people that went on the launch and like the people at Dodge were like, we know it's bad, but the gas one's coming. So like they hated it. It was a product.
Well, everybody.
I don't know why.
It's very glitchy.
It is?
Yeah.
Apparently, so
are they out on the road now?
Yeah, I saw one yesterday.
Sort of.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen one.
I feel kind of bad that it had like a snag of a launch. I feel bad. Because I mean, you know, I want the heritage cars to, I wish we had more heritage designs. I mean, because, you know, it makes it fun for us to drive around and go, oh, look at that. You know? Yeah. So speaking of the Volkswagen bus or whatever they call it, you know, I think it's, you know, I mean, whatever, it's cute or whatever. They're missing the logo on the very front. I mean,
right. Yeah.
What happened?
And they're missing the flying V. The flying V on the front.
That would take it home for us.
Yeah, it would.
You know, I mean, we get that it's not going to look like the old one. We understand that. But that would just take it there. It would distract us from the fact that it doesn't look like the old one.
And the two-tone colors, the $1,000 option, those colors are not really bright. The yellow isn't that yellow. It's almost a green, and the red is sort of a blah.
Well, at least
the dealers are ordering them in black. That's the other problem. Is that the whole problem with what Carlo was talking about with the colors, no colors, that's what the dealers order. That's, you know, it's like Americans don't order cars.
And I have a theory. I have a theory about this. I think it's like it's one of those, it's kind of like one of those Matrix things, right? You have all these black, white, silver, and gray cars being ordered. And I am convinced that you have dealers saying, I can sell, like you're saying, Johnny, I know I can sell a black, white, silver, gray car. So they order them. And then people who go to buy cars, they say, well, I don't want to have trouble selling this when I have to sell it.
Exactly,
and I
know people,
and it's like, okay, we're all buying the car that we think everyone else likes. Has anyone stopped and actually said, do you really like black, white, silver, gray? Well, no, but everyone else seems to. Okay, well, then stop. Buy the color you want. Try that, okay?
Yeah, no, it's a lot of it has to do with if you don't Google it because you'll add to the algorithm. But you know, what color car has the best resale value? White, you know, and then
white.
People
That's
Google
right.
that and they go, must be true. It's on Google, mm-hmm. even though, you know, it's all nonsense.
Well, I mean, it couldn't possibly be any other color except for gray, silver, or black, or dull color, dirt metallic. So because that's all there is. I mean, yeah,
it's a tragedy.
If you're just joining us here on the Car Show on 90.7 KPFK FM, our guest today, very special day. We have Charles Phoenix, the expert of Americana, particularly great cars with great tail fins. And we have Johnny Lieberman, who is on seemingly every type of media that exists now. And we thank them both. And of course, Carl Brower, our usual co-host here. And I, of course, am Mark Vaughn. We are just talking, we're rambling on about, we started out with the cars that Charles remembers from his upbringing and how they are still around and how, and the reasons that we long for them so much. Do you guys think, is there any hope for the future of car design?
Yes.
Yep.
Ask the computer. Ask yeah. AI. They'll tell you. Ask Waymo. It'll tell you.
Oh, what it God. Tell I was what just up in San Francisco yesterday, and there were Zooks and Waymos everywhere, and they were just clogging the streets. It was
you
got to
leave San Gabriel, man. They're all over L.A. There's so many Waymos. I was in Culver City today. Just Waymo, 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 Waymo.
So I only rode one once, but my experience was completely this. So you get in it and you're like, but it felt like, I mean, my mind immediately went to like, I'm on a ride in a theme park, because when you're on a ride in a theme park, there is no ride operator. So, but you're going just fine, whatever. And the way it accelerated and the way that it came to a stop felt like a ride at a theme park. It was just weird. So it was kind of like, okay, well, I already call the world a great big theme park anyway. So here we are riding in a ride vehicle, basically. So, you know,
I've been on two of them. And the first time I got in it, it was for a couple of seconds, it was terrifying because it takes off on its own. And you're like clawing like the pet trying to get out of the back seat of the car. And then you realize, oh, well, it kind of works. And then you kind of relax. And an ambulance happened to come up behind us and it pulled over into this driveway that somebody was pulling out of. And that was a little mildly terrifying, but the rest of the drive, it was okay. So maybe it's the future. I don't know.
I think they're great. I mean, you know, no one talks to you. I have on my
no one talks to you.
I have on my profiles for Lyft and Uber a quiet ride. I don't want to hear your awful music, and 100% guaranteed horrible music is playing when I get into the thing that I'm paying $140 to take me to LAX. And Waymo, silent. And to me, that's worth the money, whatever it costs.
You know what? If you live anywhere near Union Station, Flyaway is the best deal in the world.
That's how I get to LAX.
I mean, I can't believe it. I mean, I'm lucky I moved out to Ontario, near Ontario Airport, so I don't have to do LAX that much anymore. But if I do, it's definitely Union Station drop-off and Flyaway.
It's $10. You put your credit card on that little thing until it beeps, and then you sit down and usually you don't have to talk to anybody there either, Johnny. So try that.
What train? What? Everyone talks to you at Union Station. It's horrible.
Yeah. Well, they're cleaning it up. They're cleaning up. They're the number of people with the yellow jackets that say like Friendship Ambassador or whatever it says on the back of them. Now I think far outnumber the crazy people. So give it a try.
Like normal people. Everyone.
So I've got to throw something in though on the no talking thing, because my first Waymo experience was, I was quite happy that it was very bizarre and it kind of didn't work in a way that kind of illuminated the problem. And I was in Austin and it was supposed to take me to a club where I was going on an event that we were all invited to, or we were all going to get in the car. First time I'm like, well, we'll see if this works. It stops and it says, you know, here you are, you know, and so I get out and I shut the door and it drives away. I look around, there's no sign of the club, the bar that I was supposed to be dropped off at. And I'm like, and you know how you can be one or two blocks off in a lot of cities today and things can change drastically depending on the city you're talking about, and even in Austin. So the short version is that there was construction on the actual street where the club was. That was the closest the car could get the Waymo. So it did what it was supposed to do. But Johnny, there was nobody, there wasn't a human. If there'd been a cab driver, he just said, sorry, this is as close as I can get. You walk 50 yards that way through that alley, take a right, and you'll be right at your bar. I wandered around for like 15 minutes, found another bar, and they told me where I had to go. And I was like, I found a flaw in the system.
Has an Uber driver ever been helpful in any way ever to anyone? Come on.
Well, that's a good point.
You're being nostalgic for like mythical taxi drivers who had something you wanted to listen to in new city streets. Uber drivers look at their phone while they drive.
Wait a minute now. Why didn't you just get on your Google Maps or whatever?
And that's what you'd think, right? But I don't know if you guys have experienced. So yeah, I pull my phone out. But first of all, now you're doing this, looking down at your phone. And where do you want to be looking when you're in a situation like that?
Where were they taking you in the first place?
Yeah, you're gonna actually get your ear pierced? What are you worried about in Austin?
Yeah, really.
But Austin, yeah, nobody's then, gonna hurt you in Austin.
Well, and you're rotating, you're like, which way is this thing? You know, you guys have seen it. You've got the thing out, and then it's like, oh wait, is it this way? And there's a delay on all. So I was like, I'm not wandering around here thinking this maybe is getting me the right direction with my phone. I could see something in one direction. I walked till I went into a bar with humans. Sometimes humans are really good substitute for technology. And I was like, I need to go to this thing. And they're like, oh, go there, and you'll be there. Thanks.
Remember back in the day where we actually drove the cars and we had paper maps that we unfolded?
Right.
I love maps.
Crazy.
Right. You
know? I love the broad scope picture of, you know, all the where I'm at.
Charles, do you have maps in your collection of Americana?
Well, I what I really collect is other people's old Kodachrome slides. That's my main thing.
Right.
That's my main stock and trade is I do these retro slideshows.
So you literally get those from garage sales, right? There'll be a big box of them.
I do. I mean, I've been collecting other people's old Kodachrome slides since 1992. And I've been making a living doing these, you know, they're like one man shows. I click from one image to the next. Every show has kind of a theme. Right now it's holiday. Well, I guess the show is after the holiday. So it's, you know, I'm about to do the holiday shows, but anyway, whatever the theme needs to be is what I, or whatever I want it to be is what I talk about. It could be Florida land or New York City land or.
I want to say it was 2003. You did at Red Cat, you did Disney.
Yeah, that might have been, you might have been there on opening. I was at the Red Cat Theater when they opened. I was opening weekend and they said, we need someone to tell us about the history of Disneyland. And they called me and they said, you're the guy. I said, great. And I'll do a retro Disneyland slideshow.
So I was, that was it. Cause I, at the time I was the webmaster for Red Cat, believe it or not.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I built that website, but I remember I was like, who's this guy? And then, the head of the graphic design department at CalArts, a good friend of mine, big car guy was like, he's like, you don't know Charles Phoenix? Like you gotta know, his name's Scott Taylor. You gotta know Charles Phoenix. And yeah. So
that was a long time ago. That was the last time I actually ever used a real projector. And because the room was so big, we had to get a big, like, super high powered light bulb that the old Kodak carousel projector would sit on top of. And like one of my slides started to get a little burned because I always used to show the original slides up until then.
Right.
And that was the last night for the,
oh, cool.
That night, one of my techie friends said, nope, we're going to scan everything and you're going to be on Keynote.
Right.
And I'm like, no, the audience will not accept that. And I will not accept that. So the audience will never care, nor will they know the difference.
They don't care.
That changed. That was a game changer. I mean, it's like going from driving a car to having an automatic driver, kind of. Technology. I mean, where is this all going to end? I mean, the one thing we didn't get, they didn't get back in the day with, you know, they had phones with pictures in them and stuff. They never got that we were going to have it in our hands.
Right.
It was strapped to our waist. It was on the kitchen wall, but you know, it was never in our hand. I mean,
the closest thing, if you watch the old Star Treks, it is funny. They're holding what kind of look like iPads. You know, a lot of times they've got some kind of thing and it's clearly got there's the little yeoman showing Captain Kirk and all, and she's showing like a handheld screen about the size of today's 13-inch iPad. And that's about the only time where I agree. Rarely do you see anything like that, but I have seen those Star Treks. I'm like, that was kind of an iPad. They kind of had that one figured out back then.
How far off is teleportation, speaking of Star Trek? Oh, you know, because at some point cars will be obsolete, right? How far away is that?
Well, that very, very, very far away. But having your own personal robot car, you know, so that's what I was doing up at Rivian yesterday. It was their autonomy and AI day, and pretty fascinating. But they were basically saying that, and these terms are just ridiculous. But like, so you've all heard of AI chatbots. So that's a generative AI, and then there's agentic AI, which is where AI acts on your behalf. It's your agent. So you say, hey, go figure something out for me. Like, you know what I like to eat. I'm going to San Francisco. Find a restaurant you know I like and book it for me. And 7 o'clock's good. It takes care of it, puts it on your calendar. And then the final thing is physical AI. And that would be, you know, in the case of Tesla, it'd be a robot that, you know, walks around your house. And with Rivian, they're saying it's a personal level 4 vehicle. So you stay at home and doom scroll, the car goes out, takes the kids to soccer practice, runs by the grocery store, picks the kids up, comes home and charges itself, and you don't leave the couch.
How far off did Rivian say that was?
2028.
Who does 2028? That's 5 minutes from now. I want to get out. I mean, I love my
house. You can also get out.
I want to go places. I want to get in that transportation machine and kind of discover and look. And
I want a manual choke. I want a manual transmission. I have in my garage, I have my 1961 Lancia Appia, which has a manual choke. It has a 4-in-the-tree transmission. It's just a crazy, crazy car. And I just love it for all those reasons. Obviously, crank windows. Yeah.
I don't think Rivian is coming for your Lancia. They're just making a product, you know, that'll do all that. But again, like, you know, in next week, they're launching UHF, unlimited hands free. And so right now, Rivians can go on 150,000 miles of roads in North America hands free. And next week, that becomes over 3.5 million miles of roads. So anything that basically has like line markers, it can just kind of, you know, correctly drive itself is the idea.
But Johnny, even when like you're going and, you know, there's the inevitable, I'm in the right lane and there's the lanes going off to the exit, and it's not going to like get tricked and all. Cause I still feel like cars I'm in now start trying to exit because, oh, that's the line we're following. And
I mean, they're saying no, they're, you know, it's, you know, these like, you know, cars now have big neural networks and it's not just rules based anymore. Like they actually like understand how to drive. And we went, so the next thing after hands-free, it's called point-to-point, which is what the Tesla full self-driving version 14 does today. And yeah, you just say like, hey, take me to the adult bookstore, and it drives you right there, you know?
Another thing that doesn't exist anymore.
You guys, I mean, we might as well face it. I mean, seriously, not joking around. I mean, this technology, it's here.
Yeah.
And it's going to take like all technologies take like 20 years to funnel down or whatever, trickle down to the base models. In 20 years, all new cars are going to be self-driving. I mean, it's going to be an evolution, but it's already creeping in. We see it. We know it. We've all ridden in them already. And I mean, or whether you're, I mean, it's like your own car will be self-driving, right? I mean, or partially self-driving.
I mean, that's the plan. I mean, you know,
Seems like it's going to totally happen. The other thing is, I forgot what the other thing was. Oh, car sharing. So, you know, like in cities and stuff, there's no room to park all these cars, kind of. I mean, you know.
I think in America, car sharing really never takes off beyond like unmarried young people. But because we said, hey, you can do all this stuff now. Like, could you make it a robo-taxi? And you know, Rivian's response was like, well, you're going to be spending a lot of time cleaning vomit out of the back of your own car and other fluids.
Well, yeah. You know,
but you probably don't want to do that with your car.
Yeah, it's still going to exist, though, like more than it does now, car sharing, I think. I mean, like, look at New York City as a, as an example. I mean, taxis. I mean, even though there's not even a yellow cab to be found anymore, which I miss, of course.
Of course.
Marathon. Checker marathon. They should all be checker marathons. They should weigh 7,000 pounds.
So, yeah, checker marathons. Oh, my God. Weren't those made in, like, Minnesota?
Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most bizarre car. And they didn't change from, like, they hardly changed from 1959 to 1984.
There's no reason.
I know. But you know what? There's not one left in service in New York, because I went down that rabbit hole, like, 5 years ago.
Oh, you looked it
up? Really? They're all gone.
A rental, like a movie rental one, but that's it.
Well, if in fact the robo taxis take over, then Johnny won't be disturbed by an Uber driver anymore. So
that's right. Unless we're sharing.
My problem with Uber drivers is not whether they want to talk or not. I mean, you know, whatever with that. It's that they're lousy drivers.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
Oh, my God. That's my problem with
them. And they're on drugs.
Yeah. I took one to the airport Tuesday morning, Orange County Airport. It's a very easy 20-minute drive from my house down here in Orange County. And it was definitely, I was like, wow, the driving skill level just keeps dropping, doesn't it, man? Ugh.
Yeah. But, you know, Rivian's, Waymo's, they drive pretty okay, you know. So they're getting better.
I know. It's amazing how we're all able to, like, multitask while we drive now. Like, you know, God knows half of us are on the phone while we're, I mean, like, literally, like, cruising the web.
Yeah. That's the next big thing that Rivian talked about yesterday was, so after you go point to point, then you get to do what's called eyes off. And that means
that's level three, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to have LiDAR on the top of the R2. And if you pay, whatever it is, like it's $2,500 a year or one time or whatever. But you get your time back, as they say, real gross Silicon Valley speak. But you don't need to be looking, you don't need to be paying attention for the car to drive itself. So,
well, that'll be a relief since we all need to spend more time scrolling on doom scrolling.
That's right.
Instagram. That's what I need more in my life.
Right. Yes.
They should require, it should be a federal law, maybe with a new administration. We'll have a federal law where you have to have manual transmissions. You have to be able to engage a clutch.
Gears are going away, man.
No power steering, no power brakes. You step on the brakes, you don't know which way the car is going to go. It's going to dive right or dive left. You have to be, you know, on top of things.
I can't believe with all this car talk, I mean, speaking of progress and everything, we still have to plug stuff in the wall in that socket, just like it's 1932.
Oh, to recharge?
Wait, well, I'm not talking about a car. I'm talking about like a lamp. We still have to plug stuff in the wall. What's up with that? But now we're getting off on other topics. Aren't we supposed to be talking about we are talking about cars.
Yeah, we are sort of talking about cars.
Back to the classic lane. So in your guys' writing and stuff and learning and living in the realm of all the car stuff, I mean, you know, what's happening in the classic car strata these days? I mean, I know, I'll tell you what I think's happening. I didn't let you answer. That's not
polite. No, go ahead.
Go ahead. You outrank us all.
It's crystal clear that in LA, in SoCal, the absolute undisputed darling of the car, of the classic car world in just overall, 100,000,000% is what car, what brand?
Porsche 911. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, any Porsche. It's like everyone has gone Porsche. And I admit it. I have loved Porsches since I could focus my eyes.
And 911s still have color out of all new cars made that aren't.
I'm talking about old cars, though. Vintage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know they still do have color. Speaking of color,
and I think Porsches are almost unique. Maybe Countaches are there. They look good in any color.
They do, and they go out on a limb. Like, when was the last time you saw any other car that was like magenta
or mint?
Exactly.
Lamborghini's got some good colors.
No, but
Charles, your Dodge Challenger is still pretty good color.
I think the Dodge Challenger is off the assembly line. Isn't it, Charles? Sadly.
Yeah,
they're not making it anymore. And by the way, I've got a plum crazy Demon 170 below me where I'm sitting right now in the garage below me, Charles. So
how is it?
huge Mopar guy growing up. I'm just looking for a photo because you guys are talking about colorful Porsches. You know, when I wanted to get my 997 to 911 and all, and that was my mission 2 years ago, it took me 6 weeks to find a non-black, white, silver, or gray Turbo S. I mean, and everyone's like, yeah, they make a lot of black Porsches and a lot of, it's like, no. They were giving away a free Boxster for every time they sold a Turbo S, a black Turbo S. I swear that must have been the deal. Because it's not like there's a lot of 911 Turbo S's in black. They're all black. It's like, what the hell is going on here? You know, it was frustrating as hell.
You know, I was looking the other day at just a lowly 996 six-speed manual. And all the silver ones, and they're mostly silver, they're about, you know, not quite $10,000 with 3 days left of bidding. One green one was $36,000. And the difference was it was green. It was the same car, same mileage, same year, just wasn't silver. So
are you talking about Boxsters? Did I miss something? Are you talking about Boxsters right now?
No, 911s.
Oh, okay. 911s.
But yeah, steering it back to the classic Strata, the classic era. I mean, you know, the Porsche rules in SoCal. And then second place would be, I mean, it seems to me, Volkswagen, you know, Volkswagens and all that. But you know what? I want to change the topic for 1 second about like classic car shows. I don't really go to that many classic car shows, really. I need to go to Cars and Coffee, but I somehow never get there. Wherever, but the most interesting car show to me, though it's not really my lane, is this car show that happens every like New Year's Eve day in Arcadia. It's called the Horseless Carriage Show, and it's all pre-1934 or pre-1932 cars, and it's just so bizarre. All these cars that show up that are so old-timey. It's like, what's that?
Yeah.
It's some giant, like, 1912 Nash touring car. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, every single car is so different. Leno's there. I mean, people are dressed up like it's 1922. It's kind of, the whole thing is kind of amazing.
I'm looking up the date of that. It always takes place, I think it's the Sunday between Christmas and New Year's. And it's in Arcadia at that park, right? On the eastern end of the golf club, and I've been to it many, many times. I got to ride in some of the cars over the years, and it is really cool because it started out as brass era cars only, and they realized fairly. I think this is like the 70th running of this thing.
They started in 54.
Wow.
Yeah, They realized that, you know, there are not enough running brass era cars to fill out a field, and there aren't enough guys still alive who want to fix those and make them run.
To turn them on. Yeah.
So it's up to 1932 now, but anybody can go and see this. It's between 7 and 9 a.m. And, you know, I'm looking at their website here, and of course it doesn't have the date. Well, thanks very much.
Why have a date? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be, what, in 3 weeks and they don't have a date yet? I love it. The old grandpas are still running the show. It's great. It's great.
No, but I like that you brought up the size thing, Charles. It's like were humans bigger back in the 30s and all? I mean, you look at the scale of those cars from back then. And it's like, look at how long that hood is, you know, and look.
Well,
at
that's what people say about, you know, the 50s and 60s cars. It's so big. I could never drive a car like that. Yes, you could. My great grandma drove a car like that.
They had so much power steering boost. Anybody could drive. Okay. The holiday motor excursion is Sunday, December 28th. That's going to be tomorrow when this show airs. Sunday, December 28th, 7:30 a.m. arrival at Arcadia Regional Park. The tour departs at 9:30 a.m. So you have 2 hours to just wander around and look at these cars and talk to the owners. And the thing is, the tour takes off and you can't technically go on the tour unless you are one of the entrants. But there's nobody stopping you from following.
I was going
to
say, if I followed them with a Myers Manx, what are they going to do?
They're going to love you. You know that. Thing is, though, if you're standing there and watching all the cars like exit the parking lot, like, you know, kind of just watching the parade go by, wear a gas mask. I mean, the exhaust level is unbelievable. By the way, does anybody go to Retromobile and Paris?
I am going. I'm going next month. I'm going to be there. I'm spending a lot of my own money to attend because I've wanted to go. I've been covering that forever, and I want to go see it. And Charles, you're going to be over there around that
time. I guess I'm going to go. I was planning a trip to Paris. For what reason, I'm not even sure. It's a long story. But then I realized Retromobile is going to happen, and I'm like, okay, the suns and the stars and the moons are all aligning.
So in November of 26, Retromobile New York is happening for the first time ever.
Ooh, right.
Really? Why don't we do it here? We need Retromobile in SoCal. That's where we really need
it. It's happening in New York. Sotheby's is somehow involved.
New York.
Sotheby's? No. Christie's.
Where in New York? I hope not in Manhattan.
Javits Center.
Javits.
Oh, Jacob Javits Center, which is a big enough place, and that's sort of like in Paris, it's at the Porte de Versailles, which is the same place they have the Paris Auto Show, or used to have it. I don't know if it's
used to have it. Yeah.
And it functions there. It works there. But there's not anywhere near as big a car scene in Europe as there is here in Southern California. So I don't know if that will translate to New York or what's going to happen, but
New York has a hell of a car scene. New York, lots of cars in New York. So,
but it's seasonal,
cars,
right?
You guys, there's cars everywhere. I mean, one of my favorite shows that I went to a couple years ago that I'm definitely going to go back to is for American cars. It's all pre-64. It's in St. Paul at the Minnesota Fairgrounds. It's called Back to the 50s. It's an incredible car show. Like, there's 10,000 pre-1964 American cars there. And among them, there are some real gems and jewels. Oh, so yeah, that's really fun. And then Iola, Wisconsin has an incredible one. I don't know. They all must have barns, I'm convinced. All these people in like Wisconsin and Michigan and Minnesota, there's so many classic cars there.
St. Ignace, another big one in Michigan.
They have them in a barn at home, I guess. They have all this storage, so they just keep their great-grandparents' car. Yeah. And, you know, they're responsible, and they keep them up, and they drive them to the show every year. Amazing.
Amazing. So we're down to, 9 minutes left here, and I want to make sure to make it worth your while coming on the show. Charles, what do you have coming up, and where can people get some of your, exposure to your Americana? How can people follow you?
Well, you can go on my Instagram, _CharlesPhoenix is my Instagram. And then Facebook, you just search in Charles Phoenix or whatever search. And website, charlesphoenix.com. I'm going to be in Palm Springs for Modernism Week. All my bus tours are already sold out. That happens in Feb. I don't say Brewery. Nor do I say Tober for Oct either. Oct and Feb.
he's a radical.
Well, no, not really. It's just, why waste the syllables? lots happening. I have two big retro slideshows coming up in Feb at Modernism Week in Palm Springs, which are a lot of fun. One is going to be the Great American Road Trip. It's all 50s and 60s, like you're going on a vacation around the United States. And the other one is the Grand Tour of Europe in the 50s and 60s. That's kind of my excuse to go to Europe in the first place.
Ooh,
so nice. I kind of just say, I was just there when I'm doing this show. So
When is the Grand Tour of Europe?
That's I don't know the exact date, but it's in February at Modernism Week in Palm Springs. So you go.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. I website. See. It's not actually in Europe, right? Got it.
No. It's in Palm Springs, which, by the way, Palm Springs has an amazing car, vintage.
Insane.
Car.
And yes. The thing about Palm Springs is because it's so hot, everything's in a garage, so you have to like stand there and get lucky. But like I've been to people's houses and they're like, oh yeah, I have this like Bentley. I'm like, you have what? Like, what? I've known you for 30 years. How do you have Bentley?
Yeah. Or it's like Scott and Sandy out there who have a warehouse that they keep all their cars in. A lot of warehouse space, like the hangars out at Santa Monica Airport.
Well, it's also a great driving area. The roads that come out of Palm Springs, if you want to have a really fun drive and a really cool set of cars, there's a lot of options out there.
So Palms to Pines. Out.
Yeah. Speaking of Porsches, one of my friends there, he built like a glass box in his living room so he could park his, once every year, a brand new Porsche. So when people come over and sit in the living room, they can see it. So, I go over there. He's the one, he had a magenta one. Now it's like Kelly green.
Perfect.
Porsche.
Hey, so who's that architect? We're talking Porsches real quick, just to prove it. Of course, the radio listeners can't see it, but
there it is.
That's what it took years. Mark's ridden in this, but it took 6 weeks to find a non-black, white, silver, or gray 9972 Turbo S.
What is the name of that red?
What's the red?
It's ruby red. That is ruby red.
It actually looks better in person than when Carl holds up his phone to the StreamYard
laptop camera. Yeah, it's a little more vibrant than it looks in that photo. That's but it's just so hard to find like colorful cars. You know, I get disappointed. But
I just find
it's a cross we must all bear. Before we run out of time, Johnny, tell the world what you have going on. You've got a couple of new media that you are people can experience your wonderfulness. Tell us what those are.
So Spice Car Radio is a podcast I do. Also, The Inevitable is a Motor Trend podcast me and Ed Lowe do about the future of cars. The most exciting thing I'm doing is Road Rat. I don't know if you know The Road Rat. It's a British book.
The magazine, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the best magazine going. And I got the cover story for the issue coming out like in a week, which it's a 90s supercar issue. And
What did you write about?
I said I want to do the definitive Diablo origin story because Tom Gale, who a wonderful man who designed the PT Cruiser, who was the head of design at Chrysler and also the VP of international design when Chrysler bought Lamborghini, 10 years ago, he showed me a picture on his laptop of the Gandini Diablo at Lee Iacocca's villa in Tuscany. And I was like, what the hell's that? He goes, that's the design we rejected. We actually, a bunch of Americans who did the Viper and the minivan and the Dodge truck designed the Diablo in Royal Oak, Michigan, but we never told the story for various reasons. And I said, Tom, you got to let me tell that story. He said, no. And then, Gandini has since died. And then I talked to Tom and, some of the guys that designed the Diablo are starting to die. It was, 37 years ago. And he said, yeah, let's do it. And he had a book made. He said, it's the only car he's ever done it with. He goes, one day I know I'm going to have to tell this story because it's the truth. Gandini had nothing to do with the Diablo. And then at the very end, when he actually sent a tooling car from Michigan to St. Agata, and he sent a guy named Bill Dayton, who was the designer, to protect it. So in other words, they wouldn't let they felt that like the Lamborghini Playboys, the they were too close to Gandini and that they'd pull a fast one. So this guy like guarded the tooling buck for a year.
We've got a minute and a half to go.
The day he leaves, they stick Designio Marcello Gandini on it. And and Tom was like, yeah, it's just typical Lamborghini, just sticking their thumbs in our eyes. But it's a cool story, and we got the receipts. I have
where can listeners find that story?
You go to Road Rat and just Google Road Rat and buy it. It's a big, sexy magazine. It's great. So
okay.
Yeah.
Well, we have a minute to go here on the show. I had no idea what was going to happen on this show because you get these oftentimes when you get these great powerful entities together, they create a harmonic divergence that destroys the Earth. But I thought this one went quite well. No Earth destruction. Always, all of us are big fans of Charles Phoenix. If you want to follow him like an acolyte, like we all must do, just quit your jobs and follow him from show to show. Go to charlesphoenix.com, spelled just like you think it would. Johnny is on every bit of social media.
Mostly Instagram.
Okay.
Oh, I guess I have a YouTube channel now. So.
Yeah, and he has it. Yeah, what's the name of the YouTube channel?
Driving with Johnny.
So you drive all kinds of cool things there. We're down to 15 seconds. Carl Brower, our friend and co-host, thank you for coming on. And I am sort of the host, Mark Vaughn at autoweek.com. Stick around. Next week, everything will be back to normal. Maybe, maybe not. And we will see you then here on The Car.
KPFK's on-air winter fun drive has successfully wrapped up. However, KPFK's end-of-year sustainer campaign is one of the most important fundraisers of the year, and it's still going until the ball drops in Times Square. Monthly support gives KPFK stability we can count on, not just during drives, but all year long. We're hoping that you can help us reach 500 sustaining members by December 31st by calling 818-985-5735 and pressing option 2. Or you can donate to become a monthly sustainer online at kpfk.org/donate. Happy holidays to everyone, and here's to more power to the people and people-powered radio in 2026.
Support for KPFK comes in part from Rhythm Tribe, in concert, live at Catalina Jazz Club. Sunday, January 4th, 2026, Rhythm Tribe blends Hibato rhythms like bomba with Afrobeat and R&B to create a unique neo-soul Latin fusion sound. Further information and tickets are available at catalinajazzclub.com and dancemaster.com.